On this week's show, Construction Engineering Cowboys, the Wild Wild West with Jasper Calcara, the new sheriff in town, from DH Charles Engineering. All right, Nathan Wood. Good to see you back. How you doing, man?
I'm doing the snow dance over here. I heard there might actually be a storm or two up there.
I won't call it a cycle, but I won't call it a comeback, but at least we got some of that white money that rains from the sky that brings me so much joy. So hopefully you get to sneak out a little later. I like the, got to call it out for those watching on YouTube. The Plexus Patriot is in the back, but the true Captain America is up front. So gotta love it. I like the addition.
In our Charlie Dunn Lego format, as it only could be.
Yes, right? Gotta have Legos are for business now. Just so you know, they're for adults too. And Jasper, you're shaking your head over there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're going to get into this sheriff thing. We're going to go down a rabbit hole. We're going to have a little fun. But before we do, all right, you guys know this. The sheriff's going to tell you. We're on youtube.com/@thecontentcrew. Follow us. Get the shorts. You're going to dig it. Share them with your friends. Share the show with your friends. Remember, the person you might help might be the person that's causing your problems. So share the show with them. Maybe they'll get a little insight, or maybe they'll just know a little bit more about what us geeks over here do. And follow everybody on our social media. Remember to connect with the guests. It really brings home the value.
Are you tired of all the talk about solving the industry's problems? And you just want to roll up your sleeves with the industry's best and brightest? Well, the CPC's returning to Denver, Colorado from April 8th to 10th for the 5th annual AEC Integration Summit. That's right, participate in one of the four teams' topics, from frictionless change orders to AI for issue resolution. Identify root causes of these shared pains and discover new approaches to solving them. Learn more at constructionprogress.org/AECI Summit 26. The problems you learn to solve could be your own. Join us there.
All right. So Jasper, the new engineering sheriff. Actually, give everybody an idea of who you are and a little bit of your arc of your world in the industry.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting new title. It fits a little bit, I think, based on some of the highlights in my career. But yeah, I mean, I grew up in the Bay Area and splitting time between my parents. They're both musicians. My dad was a work construction in San Francisco. So kind of early on, I was exposed to, you know, to that field, but also the music and the creativity, you know, both of those, you know, really left a lasting impression on me and played a big role in my career. Grew up crossing the Golden Gate Bridge, is one of my favorite structures in the world. As I got older, I'd stare across the bay and see the Berkeley campus and started dreaming of going there, you know, and luckily that dream came true. So, you know, I studied civil engineering, structural emphasis. Construction engineering is not taught in primary curriculum. It's pretty unknown. It's expanding a little bit, but I got hired right out of school to work for kind of a startup in this area. Don Charles, he had worked for Bechtel kind of all over the world. And then went back to Santa Rosa, California to start his family and his own firm. So it was he and I in a granny unit behind his house. And I was all of a sudden immersed in this world of construction engineering.
I mean, I like this musicians and creativity. We talked a little bit. Nathan referenced Charlie Dunn about the Legos. And, you know, we've gone back and forth over time about how construction really is like music. Takes all these different parts and pieces. And I think we focus so much on the job site when we're talking about that. But honestly, it's like the architects and engineers are composing the sheet music and what we're going to do. And then, like you say, construction engineering, getting out there and mixing the two. So I like the analogy. So quick startup, you know, it's an engineering company startup. So a little different than the startups our listeners might be thinking of. This is a true foundational startup in that world. What, you know, how was that growth and process? It seems like, you know, from the pre-call, you got some freedom. You weren't the sheriff back then, right? You were the Wild Wild West.
No, I know. I was definitely a student, but it was just an incredible match. Don, the founder, and myself. Most people in engineering structures especially tend to go get their master's degree. I was ready to get out in the world. I came from humble beginnings. I was really driven and eager to, you know, to make a life for myself. And he gave me that opportunity. And he was just such an incredible mentor, but he gave me the freedom to help drive us in so many new directions. You know, when I started, he's still doing half the drawings by hand and calculations written out, you know, after cramping from writing out a 30-page calculation, like, Don, we are changing this. We're moving into the next century and evolve that way. But also just, he kind of threw me in the fire. He really did. And that's what our industry is you never know what call you're going to get. And I would get that, hey, Jasper, figure this out call. Just the perfect fit for what I love. I love a challenge. I love teamwork. I love to be creative. So I didn't even know that this was for me until I was in it. And it just kind of skyrocketed right from the beginning.
I'm super curious, and I've never heard of this construction engineering term in context for you, Jasper. I come also from a civil engineering background and made that decision late in college that I knew I didn't want to be a structural engineer, because with computers these days, you're just going to be punching numbers in a screen, and you know, it's not as fun as, you know, being a GC. And this idea of construction engineering seems like it's kind of a blend of the two. Or I guess, yeah, like, so how new is the term itself or the field? And yeah, how do you describe to folks what it is and how it's different from just traditional structural engineering?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll kind of take you back in time a few hundred years quick though. So in college, I took an architecture class. I ended up writing a term paper on Brunelleschi, who built the Duomo in Florence, this famous dome. First of its kind, largest structure. He kind of resurrected old technology that had been lost since ancient Rome. And he's the one credited for starting the Renaissance. Anyways, I wrote this paper about him, knowing nothing about his history. And what the paper ended up evolving into is that he invented so many incredible technologies to build something that's never been built. He invented these cranes and these processes and ultimately did build something that had never been built before. So, you know, that's the first time I never even thought of that, but I had no idea that would end up being my entire career. So, you know, it's been around forever. We were asked to build things that have never been built before, and the technologies to build them are not the ones that are the primary focus. So they end up being something that's kind of left till the last minute, and then we're asked to be called in. So temporary works, construction engineering, whatever term you want to use, that's kind of the world that I was thrown into.
Explain some of the things you would build in that. So, because I know we got a couple of folks listening that are like, what would that even consist of?
I would probably break it down into a few categories. And these categories kind of grew as our lines of work. When I first started, we were doing a handful of things. And I like to put it like this. So one of our biggest projects we worked on was the building of the new Bay Bridge in the San Francisco Bay Area. Essentially, we wanted to position ourselves so that no matter where they were in the scope of that project, they could call one firm to help them, because, you know, they're digging a hole at the bottom, they got to support the excavation, right? Then they're pouring the concrete foundation, they got to stabilize that concrete. Then the towers are going up, there's cranes lifting cages, you're getting up to the span. So at every stage of construction, there's a challenge that has to be addressed, whether it's for access and safety, whether it's, you know, forming and holding, you know, concrete or whatever it may be. I mean, it could be sliding a giant section of bridge over to phase the traffic, right? So that's just an example of where on one project from top to bottom, there's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of individual engineering challenges that is just very under-supported expertise, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I never would have thought the former, yeah, engineering around the concrete and the crane that's potentially, you know, picking things up around it. Yeah. Could be the same engineer that's doing both of those calculations. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like it's necessarily the safest of work.
It is really one of the most dangerous parts of construction, right? You're at the forefront of everything happening. It's all fast paced. You've got tradesmen that are moving between jobs and they're trusting their supervisors or trusting the engineer that have put them in these positions. You know, they're dangling hundreds of feet above the water in many cases. You know, they're down 100 feet below the ground. So they're really putting their lives in your hands. And of course, seriously, it's the foundation of what I do is safe and everything we do is safety, but it's also built with this extreme pressure to get it done quick and get it done cheap.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about it, the architects and the engineers have this time to make sure it's structurally sound, time to make sure that when it's finished, it's done. You're talking about the overlooked part of getting the underground up and you know, like you said, tradespeople hanging from places. I mean, you think all the way back, if I'm not mistaken, like the Bay Bridge is where they came up with the netting originally during the construction. It said, no, we're not going to let people fall. We're going to put this below. And they said, this is going to cost a lot of money. And he said, I don't care how much money is one person worth. And it did. It ended up catching a lot of people. It didn't, you know, it's not, they weren't unhurt, but they weren't dead. And we've come a long way since then. I mean, we're not putting nets up and hoping, right? So, I mean, what are some of the other, obviously this is such a niche piece that you do, but I can't think of any big project doesn't need it. So what kind of projects have you been on over top?
We work all over North America. So as we knew that the need was so high, so we just started kind of moving our way across the country and then up into Canada. So essentially any project could be a 5-foot hole in the ground, or it's, you know, a new 500-foot tall Ferris wheel in Las Vegas, right? You never know what the next call is going to be. So, you know, I could jump into some of the more interesting, exciting ones. Personally, it's fresh in my mind because it's the Olympics right now. And I've been watching a lot of those events. So early in my career, I was lucky enough to lead the design and inspection of over 300 temporary structures on the Olympics. So we're talking camera towers, bridges, bleachers, support system. If you were to watch on TV right now, you'd see all of these structures, right? You're building temporary cities in many cases that get torn down after the Olympics. So we were tasked with that. It was such an incredibly exciting, dynamic experience. But I always tell people the most exciting thing I've ever done on a site visit was for that. I was sent up to the top of the men's downhill course with a snowboard to inspect all the scaffolds, camera towers all the way down. They take me to the top of the normal lift. It's so windy. We get off and there's an extra lift built from there to the top of like this little peak of a mountain. And they're like, technically the winds are too high. We have to shut this down, but we're on a time restraint. You got to get up there. So Robin, who's one of my engineers still with me, we get up there, we're getting blown around. We're set on this like straight down sheet of ice, essentially. I have never been blown uphill. Every time you try to stop, the wind would push you uphill. And, you know, I just remember like, this is the, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe the opportunity to go down the men's downhill course and then inspect all these structures. So this is an example of it. You just never know what you're going to be involved in.
Before we go past that, we can't leave it here because you guys can see and have known for years that I live in Beaver Creek, Colorado. And that is where the men's downhill course here, the one in North America that they now ski on the regular circuit. You have no idea when he says it's not as they don't want snow. They want absolute blue ice to go as fast as they can. They just want a little grains that they can sink that sharp edge into. And they do. It's so exposed where you ride. So you got to admit, I mean, us skiers, we have four edges. He's got two. And that is scary, my man. Scary.
I don't think I told you. I went back to the snowboard this year. And
yes, you did.
That is the one part I do not like is, yeah, when it's an ice patch, there is not much safety net there.
Like, what kind of liability are you taking on? Who's hiring you typically? Is it the owner? Is it the designer? Like, help us understand kind of contractually how you fit in this whole mess.
So typically a general contract has been awarded a project. Let's say it's a bridge, a building, whatever it is, a retrofit. They'll oftentimes then hire specialty subs to do a certain portion of the project. So we have a great relationship with a lot of those specialty subs in the scaffolding world. We work with a ton of scaffolding companies because they're one of the first calls for access, for structural shoring. So we'll get the call after everything's in order, like, okay, here's the job, here's the project, get going. Same thing with the below ground industry, which I'm very involved in, work directly for them or directly for the general themselves. They'll call us with the scope of work. We've got to build this. Hopefully they're giving us days, not hours to turn things around, or maybe once in a while, a few weeks or months, but typically it's really like last second. They're on site. They need to get something engineered.
Guessing most often they're probably a construction manager at risk, where the GC, I mean, they're taking on all the risk anyway. So they're kind of saying, hey, if we're going to protect our risk, we're going to hire in the best and protect that risk. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, risk is a huge part of what we do. You have to have a risk tolerance. And of course, from a legal standpoint, we go on and on, which I don't want to because it's one of the most miserable topics. But yeah, I mean, the legal system does not really protect us very well, these types of lawsuits that can occur. But in the end, You always just really stay focused, collaborate. You're all working for the same, you know, end goal. And we just don't let the fear stop us. Because if we were just constantly feared of the risk and the potential outcome, we would never get anywhere.
Yeah, nothing would ever get built. And I think that's the beauty. That's why we called it the Wild Wild West. And we called you the sheriff. Because, you know, there's a level of, you know, it didn't matter if you were the sheriff or not. It was still a little dangerous out there. And you're still taking your life in your own hands at times. So thus the tongue-in-cheek fun with it. What I also thought was interesting in the, you know, as we led up, this freedom and this newness of what you guys built, you were able to double down and build a few other things in the process. You know, you talked earlier that, hey, you know, I think it was Don, you said that started it. Don Charles said, Don, we're not doing it that way anymore. So talk about some of the flexibility and things you've been able to build from a technology perspective, and I think you built some other things as well.
Yeah, so early on, I've always had opinion about technology, and my number one goal was whatever I was going to build, whatever process, whatever it was going to allow me and my team to do what they're best at and they enjoy the most valuable, right? Like, just no-brainer. So let's automate anything possible that we don't need to do manually that can give us more time, because we're talking seconds in my industry. Right. I'm very proud of our reputation where we're known as, you know, the ones that call back the quickest, and we have a very experienced staff. That's not by accident. Focus constantly. It didn't matter if it was the way our documents looked or the technology we invested in. So early on, it was just moving into stuff like email, right? Instructional analysis tools and AutoCAD and getting all those things looking good, the process moving smoothly. Then we would start to what we call design aids and templates and stuff. You're writing calculations in Excel to speed up a process, right? Again, shaving minutes here and there. And then what I found over time as I grew the team and we moved geographically into different areas of the country, my goal was, how can I make this team feel like we're all sitting in one office, right? It's such a dynamic industry that if you don't feel like you're connected and can trust the person on the other phone, including your customer, but you've got to start with my team, that was the biggest struggle. So I developed project management software from scratch that allowed us to not only organize our projects super efficiently, but allow us, our team, to work together to manage all these complex jobs and to manage the documents. And that product has just, you know, revolutionized the way that we operate and, you know, really allowed us to continue to grow.
I love that purpose-built solution, right? You started with that problem is in this industry that you're in, fear, risk, connection is important. Knowing that you have a team that has your back that feels like they're right there, and then you solved for it. But then you hit it multiple times. You're like, we're going to tighten up the process. We're going to make sure we know business-wise what we're doing. That's why I feel like the solutions worked for you over time and made sense, right? It wasn't like you were jumping. You have seconds, so you're going to pick something that you're going to take a lot of risk on. You're picking something you know that's going to work. Changing the way you do something to get a few extra minutes to think. So now you've kind of moved on because you talked about this. And by the way, I got to say, like, the scaffolding thing plays right near and dear to my heart. I started with a masonry contracting company. We specialized in some of that. And I didn't understand why that was needed to be engineered or why you should do those certain things. And then one time the bottom fell out and the scaffolding didn't go anywhere and the people were safe. And you realize, you know, I had somebody show me some pictures and a safety thing and say, look at all the people. That's why you take that extra time to engineer things correctly. And it's why when it doesn't happen, unfortunately, there's a lot more at risk than just a few dollars. You mentioned this while you were talking about it, you do a lot of below ground work, which I don't think people give enough credit for how absolutely dangerous underground work is. So talk about that experience with underground work and now you're leaning back into the industry.
Yeah. So we've always taken a really aggressive stance of being involved, right? Because it is a small industry and educating everybody, contractors or your subs or whatever, is the most important goal towards increasing safety and efficiency and everything else. We would always go to the association meetings. We'd always go to these different organizations, and they've grown. I mean, I've been in this nearly 30 years, and we're talking about, if you say the Wild West, I mean, there are people copying and pasting stamps on documents from somebody else and shooting them around. I mean, it really, really was a mess. And I'm so proud to have been involved in a stage where not only the technology in the products, but the focus on our process has really allowed us to push this, you know, this industry into a much safer and more effective direction. So for below ground construction, you know, again, you can be killed in a 5 foot, 6 foot deep trench. I mean, the weight of that soil collapsing on you, you see these poor laborers, they're, I'm just going to jump down and get that pipe fixed real quick. And, you know, and the soil's on top of them before they can think about it, right? So it's just, everybody can understand if they get down in a 60 foot deep hole and they look up and feel claustrophobic, how scary that is. But people don't appreciate how dangerous it is at, you know, even shallow excavations. So we really support that industry when it comes to the products that are out there, because everything in construction engineering is about, you can't go fabricate something custom every job. So rental and reuse is the key focus. There's a whole industry built around it. There's an excavation shoring rental industry, a scaffold rental industry that rents products purely for the need on that specific project site. Right? So that's really where we've been focused as an industry, is educating the contractor. What product do you need? When do you need it? And how friggin' serious this is to, you know, protect your workers. And it's been, you know, it's incredibly supportive and competitive, but supportive.
That starts with education too, right? I mean, so much is getting up front of, you know, the confined space. Like, what are the situations that when you see yourself in, know what at least the initial reaction is. I think there's, you know, like when to call the experts versus, you know, what things to look out for. Like, are you guys, is there content out there? Are you creating content? How are you guys getting the word out, like from a safety standpoint, about all the risk factors in the field? Go ahead.
That's been the most interesting part of the span of my career. So at the beginning, it was just educating on the bare minimum, just protect your workers. Then it was, oh, here's the products that are available and start to use them. What's this thing called slide rail out of Germany? And now it's on products all over North America, if not the world. So it was really just bare bones. What is safety? How do we understand the codes? How do we protect our workers? Then it was, how do we introduce and use these really new technologies? But the challenge was, is like investing in education was always very low on the priority list. I've been trying to sell education as a value for so long. And a lot of companies are willing to invest in a product, right, that has value or personnel. I'd always get a no when I was like, hey, I got this idea for education program. So finally, again, we've evolved to the point where I brought up the same idea to a group of people in the industry and say, hey, if I release this education program, would you subscribe to it? And I got enough yeses that said, let's give this a try. So yeah, I started and then focused on the below ground industry and developed a series of education classes on how to read plans and bore logs and soils and specs to help navigate before it's a last minute emergency. So yeah, it's been really well received. It's been a super fulfilling project. And I hope it not only, you know, we will probably expand, but these products over time, but just, I hope it motivates the industry to invest in more education.
You mentioned the trenches, et cetera. And I didn't know about those dangers either until I joined this podcast. And, you know, Rob McKinney, our own ConApp guru safety, came from the safety side, and he would point it out to me, and I'd say, what? It looks fine. He's like, no. You have to understand the calculation that has to be done, because where you're piling that dirt on the side of the trench, depending on the type of material, et cetera, and the stability of that trench, and boom, you're done. And it was cool because he was like, well, wait, you're a skier. You think about avalanches. Avalanches do the same thing, right? It's very similar. And you're like, actually, oh my gosh, there's only 5 feet on a wall on either side of me, and I'm in a trench on the way up. I'm in a gully. That's really dangerous because they're steep and I can trigger it. It's the same thing. So you're talking about, you know, getting that education wider to more people, because, right, it kind of relies on a few people who know it. So you're talking about democratizing that to more people, and you've kind of productized it now, right? In a way.
Yeah. So with the industry that I was introducing it to, they've really given me a lot of feedback. I value that so much and appreciate their commitment to it. It spread through this group of the industry. And now I just want to, you know, eventually spread it through the general. I mean, anybody who holds a shovel or operates an excavator in the world can gain value from this. It's just so under-supported. I was talking to a contractor in, you know, South America, where they've just got billions of dollars of below ground work coming up, and just no education whatsoever. So, you know, that would be my global goal. But right now, it, you know, if I can help one person get a little safer on one job, right? And I know that sounds cheesy, but it is. It's the truth. Like, you're just trying to really help one person at a time. And this is a little bit wider reach.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because that spreads, right? When we started this technology thing, we wanted to go to every event and we just wanted one person in the crowd to be inspired to think about doing things a little differently, a little bit more efficiently and safely, right? Because that actually, you know, that's why Rob was what he was, is like, he just wanted people to be safe and he wanted to find a way to get it there. And I think now this product, this availability, is it like online courses? What is it like? Because I want people to listen in, because that's also part of the technology advancement, is you created a project management system that made people feel like they're in the room. This is not sit in the room and put the VHS in and watch the silly safety tape that everybody falls asleep on. What's it like?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I just try to pay attention to what people find engaging. You know, when I go talk, I did go kind of on a talking circuit earlier in my career to talk a lot of the same content in person in a multi-hour framework. And I had a lot of contractors come to me and say, I learned more in that hour than I've learned ever, blah, blah, blah. So I really learned early, like, okay, there is a message here. How do I get it out there? And now that people's attention span has just plummeted so much, I'm like, how do I get this highly technical information out there? So anyways, I decided to do them in half an hour segments, broken up into like 3 to 5, 7 minutes with quizzes and a lot of graphics to just kind of keep them very engaging, you know, try to keep my energy up in presenting these topics because I do love them so much, you know. So I think that it's the combination of the visuals, the quizzes, and the accessibility, where I always told them, I'm like, look, you're never going to get all this in one watch. But then you can always revisit it, right? You have this next project. You're like, what's the cofferdam? I don't remember that. And then you can go revisit the program on that. So it was really just about making it super accessible, digestible, and hopefully somewhat entertaining once in a while. The feedback's been good so far. And, you know, I can never just stop trying to improve on how we educate.
Yeah, I think it was Saul Khan with Khan Academy said it perfectly around, it was this magic of the extemporaneous, I think is the word, of like just off the top of your head explanations of like, it's your understanding of how you know it. And just for some reason that resonates with the audience, with the listener, so much better than any perfected AI bot chat thing. You know, like that may be the perfect grammar, but you miss that cognitive connection with the person that's talking. So yeah, I get it. That's awesome. And it takes work too. It takes time to put those together.
Yeah. And I love to touch super quick just because you mentioned AI, and it's just everybody's obsessed with it right now. AI is in an industry that has so little published documentation. AI is going to get it all wrong, right? So if you start searching anything about construction engineering process or even understanding nuances of the code, it can really drive you into unsafe territory. Eventually, it's going to catch on. Even my education program will probably be absorbed someday into it, you know. But at this point, it just doesn't have the resource to give answers that you can depend on. So I always caution people in any industry you're using AI, understand, well, where's it learning from? And in our industry, it's just so void of publicly published process and content and programs that it's going to be a slow climb for that industry to be supported.
We also talk a lot, and I was just talking with Jonathan Marsh earlier, and it's, you know, the kind and wicked environments, right? AI is built for kind environments. It's built for an opportunity to everything we know. Wicked environments is what we know in construction, and it is not good at wicked environments. That's just not what it may never be really that good at it, because it can analyze risk quickly, but I can see a time where it maybe tell you something's coming. It's probably too late. You got to know ahead of it. Maybe it can help us with calculations, et cetera, ahead, do them a little quicker, whatnot. But what I do like about the training piece is, we've always said this, you said it, short attention spans. There's an opportunity for a tradesperson to be in a trench one day, like you said, hanging, being on a scaffolding the next day, you know, and even being somewhat, you know, repelling, so to speak, you know, be hanging. So how can they be expected to remember all of that every time? So if you have it consumable and, hey, this week I'm going on, I'm going to be in trenches. Hey, what the heck was that guy told me? Let me just go grab it and just go back through it and just quickly, Yeah, I might jump over a few that I'm like, oh yeah, I get that. The soil, the this. Oh, wait, what was that about? Oh, I didn't think about if it was raining or not. I don't know. I make it because obviously, like, I'm making stuff up, but it's such a powerful medium to teach people with and to use as a, again, go back to it. We say this with people on estimating things. Like, you haven't estimated that in a while. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a refresher course? So you can use these as refreshers as well. Yeah. And I mean, I just think about, I don't think people think enough about how many tradespeople in this environment are being deployed on a daily basis into wicked, dangerous environments. And they're relying on people like you, Jasper, to save them.
Well, they just don't. They're not aware. I'll give you a perfect example. Okay. There was a job that I literally thought the building was going to come down on us. Okay. This is an example of where my eyes were open to how trusting the crew is to somebody else having figured it out. So I got a call late Friday afternoon. They're always the toughest and worst calls. We've always make jokes about it in the office. And I show up to this project. It's a 100-year-old, 8-story concrete and brick building. And they're leading me towards the basement. I'm hearing jackhammers. The floors are vibrating. It's dusty. It's dark. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of this big, expansive room with crew all around me blasting concrete, there's a huge structural column completely sheared through, a crack all the way through it. And I am like, you guys need to stop what you're doing and get the hell out of this building. What is going on? We went up a couple floors and another structural column completely shattered. So it was just an example of where, like, I couldn't believe that you're getting to this point and then you're calling an engineer, right? And the other is you just never know what kind of fire you're going to walk into. So I learned, that was an early project, and I learned a ton from it. But that was the key, like, just slap in the face. Who's protecting these people? A lot of time, people don't know what to look for, or they assume somebody else did it. So that's the education piece. I want to make people aware.
Yeah, I'm walking into places, yeah, and going, I wouldn't know, right? I'd have to trust you. Go ahead, Nathan. Sorry, I jumped.
But that's the reality. I think until you hit that point of failure, I mean, that's the reality of things. Is until you have those New Orleans collapse type incidents and things like that happen, people aren't going to wake up. But that's that whole, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste kind of thing. Like, how do you combine both the education with that sense of urgency to kind of remind folks, like, hey, like, that may be in the back of your mind because nobody likes to remember those things, but that did happen. And these are the reasons why, and these are the things to look out for, and to use that as that kind of eye grabbing, like, hey, don't forget about this. And this is why you should remember this thing. You know, it's going to stick in your memory that much more when you associate the education with those really visceral memories.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one alone in this. I mean, it's an incredible industry of really passionate people trying to support safety, you know. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm the only one with any kind of, like, it's an incredible industry. There's a lot of people that just really care about supporting those workers out there.
I wish Rob McKinney was here. I know he'd have a lot more to say.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm going to send this one to him when it's done, because he's definitely connect with that. But it's going to take, and Jasper, I think that's what's interesting, is it's going to take not just one, but a lot of people. And there are more of them out there. And then with the new environment we have to spread this stuff faster, it has really created a kind of a collision path to be safer. More people can know this information now. I think that's a powerful moment for you and for this industry of keeping people safe, right? We've said this all in all. And again, you guys are going to hear it on the episode before this with the news, where we said, you know, we don't want to call construction an alternative career path, especially for tradespeople, but we also have an obligation to make it a safe career path for people. And that's what it's going to take, is the combination of nobody accepting these failures on the jobs and everybody leaning in to keep them safe. Because then we can go out and freely bring in my own kids and other people's kids into this place later to be electricians, to be plumbers, to work in the concrete business, et cetera. So we got to thank you for doing it out there.
Yeah. Well, you also touched on a super quick important point, which is how this generations are used to getting content. They're used to being able to go to YouTube and get a tutorial to fix something at their fingertips. They have to wait and ask dad, right? So it's the same situation for them entering the construction environment, is that they don't have to. They are given this tool to go look at anytime they want. So I hope, because we're at a critical stage in construction, it's growing so fast and there's a lot of knowledge base retiring out. I'm seeing it every day. The knowledge is walking out the door. There's a huge rush of new young employees being put in really critical positions, and they just need those resources. And they love this type of resource. So I'm really hopeful that the community at large leans into creating more education content in this fashion, because they don't want it. No one wants to sit through 10, 12 hour day of safety training, right? It's tough. That we're headed in the right direction, but I think people need to understand that it's really a critical moment as we're transitioning here, and that it's an opportunity for everybody, honestly.
Well, I agree with you, and I will double down, and that was the mic drop for sure, because, you know, if we don't provide it, they will try to go find it because they are educated. You said it earlier, there's not a lot out there about AI in the AI world that's consumed it. There's not a lot of places to go to get the good information. They're going to try and go get it, and they're just going to get bad information. And so it takes people like you putting the good stuff out there so they can find it and keep more and more people safe. So on that note, Jasper, where can people go find out more about this? Because I think I got quite a few GCCMs and others out there and our tradespeople that are going to come looking for where can they find out more about you and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on our company website, which is charlesengineering.com, my personal LinkedIn. You know, just searching my name, Jasper Calcare, it'll pop up. And I've always been like an open phone policy with my customers. Like, call me. You got a question about safety? I mean, I'm getting to a point, hopefully, that I can't answer every call, but that there's content out there or my team, who's incredible, is available to support them. But I've always urged customers, just call. Just call. We're here to help. We're here to point you in the right direction. Even if we can't service you, we just want you to be head in the right direction. So that's the easiest way, just any one of those. But LinkedIn probably has a little bit more information about me and the program that's expanding.
Yeah, and we'll have that in the show notes for you guys as well. But definitely check out Jasper and what he's up to. Thanks. It was so great that you reached out and we got a chance to talk. I know this was something new for me going in. It took a few calls to figure it out. So I really appreciate you being here with us today.
No, it was a ton of fun. I really appreciate both of you having me on.
Thanks. Nathan Wood. Always a pleasure, Nathan Wood.
Oh, man. It was a good time. I learned a lot. Thanks, guys.
And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Jasper Calcare. To read all our news stories, to learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.